The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
This program was originally recorded on April 21st, 2015.
Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
Hi, I'm Abby Sarfo, and this is the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Tonight, we bring you part one of a two-part interview with Pete Moore, bass singer of Motown supergroup The Miracles. They were Motown's first successful act, and the group made huge contributions to rock, pop, and R&B. We're about to hear former Mojo Hour host Phil Barnes talk to Pete Moore about the early days of Motown, and about being discovered by the label's founder, Berry Gordy. So let's start things off tonight with some music by The Miracles. This is Baby Baby Don't Cry on WVUD.
Nothing so blue as a heart in pain. Nothing so sad as a tear in vain.
Yeah, we are back here at 91.3 WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. My name is Philip Barnes, and this is the Mojo Hour. And we just heard The Miracles with Baby Baby Don't Cry. And I think on the phone right now, we've got Pete Moore. Pete, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine, and yourself?
Yeah, we're really good here at WVUD. Thanks for joining us. For those listeners out there, Pete Moore was the bass singer for The Miracles and also a prolific songwriter for the Motown label. As I just said, we heard Baby Baby Don't Cry, which was one of their hits in the late 60s. What year did that come out, Pete? Do you remember?
I think it was 67, I believe.
67. Let me ask you, thank you for doing this interview with us. The first time I've been able to interview somebody live on the air, so I appreciate that. How did, you know, your career with Smokey and Berry Gordy at Motown, how did that all begin? How did it all come together?
In 1957, Smokey and I had just graduated from high school together. So we had formed a group 2 years prior to our graduation, which was 1955. You know, we were very young guys at the time, and, you know, we were singing around the Detroit area at high school dances and things of that nature, and we wanted to record a record. And then one day, Ronnie White, who was the baritone singer of the Miracles, we were over Ronnie's house, and he said that his cousin had a guy that wanted to manage a group, and maybe we should set up an appointment with him and do an audition for him. And we said, oh, yeah, okay. So that next week, you know, we went down to the south that they were having auditions at, and, you know, we walked in and we sat down, and a guy walked up to us and said, are you guys, this is before The Miracles, obviously.
Right.
We were called the Five Chimes at that time. And he said, well, are you guys the Five Chimes? And we said, yes, we are. So he said, okay, it's time for you to conduct your audition. So we went into this room. You know, this guy said, okay. He introduced himself. He was Jackie Wilson's manager. And Jackie was a big star back then. So he said, okay, kids, without further ado, show me what you got. You know, so we had written 4 original songs because we wanted the gentleman to know that we were capable of writing our own songs, and we didn't want to sing songs that were previously recorded. So we started singing the first song, and we got about halfway through, and he stopped us. And he said, now, wait a minute, kids. You know, you kids are cute. You're a nice-looking group, but I don't think you're quite ready yet. You know, we already have the Platters out there. The Platters were the biggest group in the country at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had 4 guys and a girl. And he said, look, we already got the Platters out there. He said, I think you kids are cute, but I don't think you're quite ready. You know, maybe come back and see me maybe in about another year. So we were very dejected, obviously. So we walked out of the audition.
And were you singing, obviously without any backing band or anything like that? I mean, it was just you and the other four up there just doing it a cappella? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, back then, that's usually how it happened. And we were young kids who couldn't afford a band or anything of that nature. You know, so we were singing a cappella.
Right.
So we walked out of the audition, and we was on our way to our cars. All the while, we were auditioning. There was a guy in the room. He didn't introduce himself or anything, and he witnessed the audition as short as it was. So we walked out of the building, and we was on our way to our cars, and this guy that was in the audition ran out of the building, and he stopped us. And he said, wait a minute, kids. I like you kids, and I'm looking for a group to manage. My name is Barry Gordy. And Smokey and I talk about this to this day. That was just God. You know, that's the only way I can explain that.
Mm-hmm.
So Smokey and I looked at each other and we said, wow, this is Barry Gordy. And we knew who he was because Barry had written all of Jackie Wilson's hits in those days. You know, Re Petite, Lonely Teardrops, To Be Loved.
Yep.
You know, Barry Gordy wrote all of those songs. You know, so we knew who Barry Gordy was. So we said, wow, man, this is Barry Gordy. You know, so we got excited. He said, look, I'm looking for a group to manage. He said, I like you kids. So Barry became a manager. Now, all of this, obviously, was before Motown was formed. So we got excited, and Barry started managing us, and we started singing at high school dances and things of that nature. You know, we were still young guys, young kids. You know, we couldn't sing at nightclubs or anything like that. We were too young, you know, so...
Right. I got a question for you. So, you initially said that you wanted to, you wrote your own songs and you went to the audition with some of your own songs, and then here comes Barry Gordy, who's obviously a successful, talented songwriter in his own right. Did you, did he recognize your craft at that point, and did he try to develop your own songs, or did he give you some material to work with? What was that dynamic like?
Well, Barry said, who wrote those songs? And Smokey said, well, I wrote those songs. And Smokey had a songbook of 100 songs he had written, and he had carried that songbook to the audition. So he handed it to Barry, and Mr. Gordy looked at it, and he said, you got a lot of talent here. He said, I would like to work with you and develop you into a songwriter. So that next day, we met with Barry, and Barry said he went through the whole 100 songs, and he trashed them all. Okay? And he started explaining to Smokey. He said, look, Smokey, when you write a song, you got to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. He said, now, you don't necessarily have to have an end because you can write a song in such a way that the reader can make up his own ending. You know, he was trying to explain to Smokey how to write a song officially. So that's how Smokey really became the songwriter that he ultimately became, because Barry had taught him how to structure a song.
Let's take a little break from the interview to hear some of that famous songwriting. From 1964, this is That's What Love Is Made Of, written by Smokey Robinson, Pete Moore, and Bobby Rogers. You're listening to WVUD.
Of Barry writing these hit songs for Jackie Wilson, and he had wrote a couple other hits for some other artists back then. Barry didn't really have a lot of money, and the reason that he didn't was because back in those days, like the mid-50s, you know, everybody was getting ripped off. The artists, the singers, that was before the copyright statutes were initiated, and record companies and publishing companies were taking advantage of writers and ripping anybody off the same thing. Went for if you was an artist. Time to get paid, they'd give you this little small check, do a song and dance, or whatever the case might be, And so none of the artists or writers like a little place to make any money. So Barry didn't have a lot of money. So we went to him one day and we said, look, Barry, we want to record a record. And unfortunately, he didn't have enough money to take us to the studio. So he called up his family and borrowed some money in order for us to have our first recording session. So we went into the studio, recorded a record called Got a Job. This was in 1957. Obviously, this was before Motown was born. So the record came out, and it did fairly well. You know, it was a hit in Detroit, hit in Cincinnati, hit in St. Louis, a couple of other cities around the country. It wasn't a national hit, but it did make a little noise. It kind of got our name out there, okay? And so it's time for us to get paid, and the record company gave us this little small check, like I was just saying to you earlier. So Barry said, okay, well, let me see what I can do from this point. So he changed record companies, and we recorded for a company called Chess Records out of Chicago. And they were doing very well back then. They had Chuck Berry.
Right.
So we were excited about that. Berry was excited about it. We were excited about it. And we recorded a record called Bad Girl, which was our first charted record. And it hit the Billboard charts, and we were all really excited about that. We said, wow. So now we have a little national exposure as a result of it becoming a charted record. You know, so we all happy about that. And the reason the record became a charted record, this is when Dick Clark first formed American Bandstand. This is before he went national. You know, Dick started in Philadelphia as a local television American Bandstand.
Right. A lot of listeners, you know, we're in the Philadelphia area here, so a lot of listeners definitely remember American Bandstand.
Right, yeah. So, you know, we all drove to Philadelphia, and the band said, I want you guys to do this new show, because it was very popular in Philadelphia at the time, although it wasn't a national show. So we sang Bad Girl at the show, and back in those days, Dick had the kids rate records. So they rated records, and Bad Girl got a 95.
95 out of 100.
Right. That was the highest record rating of that day. And about 3 weeks later, Dick had worked out a syndication to become a national show. So on his first national show, he played Bad Girl on his first national show because it got such a high rating. And then Dick just exploded. Once he went national, the rest is history with him.
Right.
You know, but by Bad Girl being on the first national show, that's why they ended up being a charted.
So Bad Girl was the very one of the songs on the very first nationally broadcasted American Bandstand shows.
Exactly.
And let's hear a little bit of Bad Girl right here on WVUD. You stick with us, Pete?
Sure.
She's not a bad girl because she made me see.
Pete Moore, bass singer, and a Hall of Fame inductee, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee in 2012 from the Miracles. And you were just saying, Pete, that Bad Girl was the song that brought you guys to sort of the national attention when it was on American Bandstand.
That's true. That's the song that kind of got us out there.
And then what happened after that? Did the snowball continue to roll downhill? Or?
Well, the snowball kept rolling downhill at that time. Because now we are a nationally known group, and Barry Gordy is a nationally known manager. Now, we didn't get a lot of money for that song either, you know, based on what I was talking about earlier. The artist back then wasn't making a lot of money before the statutes were passed by Congress to protect artists and writers, and this was like in the mid-50s. So, Wookie called me up one day, and he said, Pete, you know, why don't we go to Barry and tell him to start his own record company, because we are not making any money anyway, start recording for these other companies, you know. So we started talking about that. And, you know, I said, well, it's not a bad idea, you know. So we had a group meeting, and that next week, Smokey went to Barry and said, look, we have a meeting, and we want you to start your own company, you know, because we're not getting paid anyway. And Barry said, do you really mean that? You know, so that next day, we had a meeting with Barry, and Mr. Gordy said, I think that's what you mean, that you want me to start a company.
Was he managing any other groups at the
no.
time, or was it just you guys?
It was just us. First of all, you know, we're the premier group of Motown. You know, we're the first artist, and everything that I'm telling you was before Motown was formed.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and so Barry said, you guys take enough of me to start a record company? And we said, yes, Barry, we do. And like I mentioned earlier, Barry didn't have a lot of money. So he went to his family again, borrowed some money in 1959. And from the money that he borrowed from his family, he bought two buildings on a street called West Grand Boulevard.
I know it well. I used to work at the Fisher Building.
I
would drive past, I would drive down West Grand every day in the summer of 2002.
Right. And, you know, one of them is called Hitchfield today. Aware of that. One of the buildings is called Hitchfield, USA.
Yep.
In the basement of that building, there was a two-track studio that the Barry had bought from the money he borrowed from his family. So in 1959, Motown was formed officially. Now, we were the only act at Motown, obviously, at this point. You know, we started recording in the basement of Hitchfield, USA, and we did a record called Way Over There, which did very well for us. And then we also did another record that did pretty good. And in 1960, we recorded a record called Shop Around, okay, which was Motown Records' first million seller. I mean, that record just exploded.
Yep.
And the reason that it exploded is because, see, Barry was a young guy himself. Barry's not too much older than we are. And now he got this company, and he wasn't aware of the fact that you didn't release records in December. And that's just a historical thing with the record industry, that all record companies really normally shut down about the second week of December.
Why is that?
Because Christmas.
People are spending their money on Christmas presents and not on music?
Well, no, people are shopping. It's just a historical thing.
Yeah.
And you got and the executives of the companies take that time off during the year to spend time with their families and things of that nature.
Oh, I gotcha, you know? Yeah.
So, but Barry didn't know that, you know, because Barry, this new young guy, just opened his record company. And that record came out on the 17th of December. That's God again, okay? Because everybody was shopping.
Yeah, just in time for the shopping season.
That's what they were doing.
Yep.
Okay. And when they heard Shop Around on the radio, that's what they were doing, you know, in the stores, buying dresses and toys for their kids and things of that nature. And that record exploded. Wow. Bam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sold like 1,200,000 copies. That obviously put Motown on the map. It put the Miracles on the map. Okay. And it gave Barry enough capital to start signing the other artists.
We'll have more of our interview with Pete Moore at a later date, so make sure to tune back in. As this episode draws to a close, we bring you one more Miracle song. You're hearing You've Really Got a Hold on Me from 1964.
I don't like you, but I love you.
Thanks for listening to The Music Room on WVUD. For more information about this and other episodes of The Music Room, including selections from the interviews and information about the music, visit us online at sites.udel.edu/TMR. Tune in next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of The Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark.